found this in Gunnerum. Gunnermir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Guy Davis.
Yes, indeed. We have breaking news, as in, like, hours ago. This will be old news by the time you hear it, but we got a teaser for the 2017 Star Trek CBS TV series. And we still don't have a trailer for Star Trek Beyond.
We're supposed to get that by the end.
Yeah, that's supposed to be out Friday because they're having.
In theory, we're getting it.
In theory, we'll hope and cross our eyes and hope that that happens on Friday at the, because it's supposed to be shown at that fan event. Not that this, you know, TV trailer showed anything other than like it looked like the J.J. Abrams credit endings.
It did show us planets. That was cool.
Planets, broken up planets, suns warping past the Earth, and it said new crews, new heroes, new villains. And so
I have heard rumor, and this is rumor, I have heard rumor that the new show is going to be anthologies.
I saw that floating around too.
And I think that the S at the end of cruise belies that a little bit.
Could be. I think that's a really good, strong, hopefully possibility. Or it could be maybe they're going to be smart about it and like establish a couple crews up front and then like only focus on one, and then they can start doing like a MCU of like different spin-off series that focus on multiple crews.
I had always kind of, and this is an idea I wanted to do before we did Tamerlan. Before we did Tamerlan, all 16 people that work on Tamerlan every week, yeah. Before I did Tamerlan, was I thought about the idea of a space station like Deep Space Nine, except that the only consistent character were characters for like the station commander, and every episode or every series of episodes would be the ship that docked at the station. Then you followed that ship to do its thing, and then at the end you'd come back and they would report back to the station commander that so and so ship finished their mission, whatever their mission was. So that the function of it would be that, you know, it would just be not a Chekhov's gun, just a function. I can't even think of the word tonight. Boy, I'm not doing good with words tonight. Words, anyway.
Words.
So yeah, the idea would be that the mechanic would just be that it was always starting at the station somehow. So you'd have a different ship that took off into this, and you have a different ship. So maybe they're going to do something like that.
Maybe. That would be interesting. It looks... It doesn't really tell us anything other than new crews, new villains, new this, new that.
And hopefully, it's
either anthology or they're thinking MCU. Because I'd be happy with both, honestly.
I saw that new trailer, too. It looked pretty nice.
Yeah, it's still kind of weird. But this one looks like they went their own direction.
Because with an anthology show, it would be really deep on the plot. Like, you know, if you're doing, you know, only one ship a season,
it's doing a little bit more.
It's
got to
have like
the beginning point and threads of
a clear plot.
Yeah,
it's not going to be.
One did seem like
I would hope it wouldn't be episodic
than what they
were
doing.
There should be like a point A, point B,
and it's got to tell the story
and the slime,
and not just be like, you know, TOS, where it's just, it's a random episode here, random episode there.
And maybe if there is sort of a stereotypical, really clever, you can make it so that each one of the ships is building to a large overarching plot. You know, you can have, kind of like if you had TNG and they talk about the Badlands, and then in Voyager they're in the Badlands.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine deals with the Marquis in the Badlands, you know, if that was like all a consistent plot arc, you know, between all of them, or all of them leading up to the Dominion War, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be cool. I'd love to see something smart like that where everything kind of ties together, even if it's anthologetic.
If it was me,
that would be cool.
And I'm horrible because I've got like, I don't know, I must have some some like secret love to be like George R. R. Martin. But what I would do is totally first season, here is your spaceships, and then the last episode of the season. Oh no, it's a big war. Look at all of these other ships. Ah, everybody dies. And then wipe out the whole ship.
You do.
You'd be like, what? And then the next season you start out with, here's another ship. They just watched the first ship die. Oh no.
Well, you'd like do a red wedding on the Star Trek.
Totally do a red wedding on the Star Trek.
That would be crazy.
Which, if you're wondering where that reference came from, I just watched the Red Wedding yesterday episode of Game of Thrones, and I was actually doing a live draw at the time and completely stalled in the middle of my drawing because it just totally, I was like, oh my god.
And he's still working on his live draw now instead of seeing his face light up at the talking of Star Trek, I see his hand on the paper.
Yep. It's over here. Except, no, I'm preparing to read the synopsis on the Andorian incident.
Yes, because last week's episode, we discovered that Andorians are, in fact, in Season 1 of Enterprise.
And I had forgotten about the whole gem thing. I guess I thought that was Season 2 of Enterprise. I don't know. I don't know where I was thinking. I was somewhere. Argentina. I was in Argentina in my brain.
It's all good. We talked about Shadows of Pajem long time ago. We named that episode Faceplant or Science Officer because we decided the part where Archer buries his face in T'Pol's bosom by accident, quote-unquote, was the only reason like, that episode existed. Other than the fact that there was a prequel episode that we will be talking about tonight.
Yeah, it was totally by accident. Okay.
So what leads us to the epic faceplant?
Right, this is the episode that leads us to the epic faceplant. So this is, I'm going to read the synopsis, and I'm going to read the Wicca synopsis, because I didn't actually write the synopsis, so I'm going to read the one out of Wikipedia, because it's funny. And then we will move from there. So, are we ready?
Yes, sir. Take it away, Sir Guy.
Captain Archer tells Sub-Commander T'Pol that he has found a remote outpost on a planet a few light years off their current heading, and he would like to visit this 3,000-year-old Vulcan mole monastery called Pajem. In route, T'Pol describes it as an ancient retreat, a place for kalanar and peaceful meditation. She also explains the strict visit protocols, all of them. They should not speak to anyone unless spoken first, not touch any relics, riding at the gym. A Vulcan elder tries... Oh, wait. There was more of them. I expected more. Anyway, arriving at the gym, a Vulcan elder tries to send them away. Oh, but Archer notices the reflected form of an armed intruder. Although they may have managed to subdue him, they are quickly captured by a larger group of armed Andorian Imperial Guards led by Commander Shran. Shran interrogates Archer, asking if they have brought more surveillance equipment for the Vulcans. The Andorians lock up the away team with the Vulcan monks, who explain that the Andorians, neighbors of Vulcan, believe that Pajem holds a long-range sensor array, and that the arrival of T'Pol and the Enterprise has unfortunately amplified their suspicions. When Enterprise attempts to contact the away team, Shran warns them not to interfere and destroys their communicators. During interrogation, wrongly disbelieving Archer's protestations of ignorance, the Andorians beat him. Seeing Archer, the monks relent and take Commander Tucker to an ancient transmitter in the catacombs. After repairing the device, Archer manages to send a signal to the Enterprise to tell them to wait.
I've never seen a radio that I can't fix.
I know.
Even Vulcan ones that are more advanced.
Vulcan radio you can't fix. It's amazing how often these engineers are like, I don't know, but hey, look, it's a battery. And they just fix it. And it's like,
oh, there's a battery inside of the thing.
I keep thinking about, you've got no experience whatsoever. Just climb up that line up there and that power line and just connect the two line feeds. It should be fun.
Yeah, let's just short it out. And did they say they were outnumbered? I think there was only 4 Andorians, right? I guess only 3 people came down the shuttle pod. T'Pol, Trip, and Archer.
There's only 4 guest actors. We'll get into... Wait a minute. Anyway, okay. After repairing the device, soon, Lieutenant Reed and the security team transport to the tunnels, taking out most of the Andorians with explosive charges and phaser fire. Shran escapes to the reliquary, where a firefight reveals a large, modern door. Not 3,000 years old. Archer manages to open it, because he's that way. It's like the engineers. Archer can open anything. The engineers can fix anything. T'Pol has a cat suit.
Although Archer doesn't manage to open T'Pol's cat suit, though.
That's true.
That's a shame. Even though he does have that Freudian slip in, like, a later episode, I think season 2 or 3, where he's like, boobs.
Yeah. Okay, Archer manages to open it, not T'Pol's cat suit. Revealing...
A green screen.
A high-tech sensor chamber. With a Vulcan deception exposed... Archer lets the Andorians go with T'Pol's palm scanner as evidence of installation.
Like, download it.
That he is now in Archer's debt.
Oh, he hates being in pink skin debt.
Oh, man.
And that's not pig skin debt, that's pink skin debt.
Pink skin.
So, this episode actually ends on a weird downer. Like, it doesn't have that, like, happy-go-lucky, you know, like, outro that they usually have. It was kind of, like, dark and sad as the shuttle pod flies back to the Enterprise.
It really does, and it's kind of I don't know, it seems like it's kind of a classic, not classic ending. Almost a Deep Space Nine-esque ending.
But almost even
the DS9 sort of took sometimes.
But almost even more depressing, like that outro music, and it just like had that discordant ending that was just like, ooh, what's up with that?
Yeah, it is kind of weird. I don't know. Yeah.
It's got the like, and then it's just, but he, like, you know, he did something good. He helped the Andorians out, and so, like, why is it a bad thing? Except for the Vulcans straight out lied.
Yeah. Like, well, this is also the first time that we kind of really get a good, serious feel that these are not Spock Vulcans.
Yeah, apparently, you know... Apparently not being able to lie is something that happens later?
It's part of the Kirshara.
The Kolonar?
It's Serenites. The Serenites are the ones that decide that they're not going to lie because that's part of the Surak's teachings. And that comes from the Vulcan Forge episodes in the 4th season.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So
that's been a while since I've seen that one.
Yes, there we go with the... And once again, what important information have I knocked out of my brain to hold this stuff in?
equals MC squared. Light and mass acceleration squared. No!
I don't know what that means. I can't do it anymore. Light speed is beyond me.
Light speed is beyond all of us.
Yes. So, this episode was you know, to give the rundown, it was written by Rick Berman, Brennan Braga, and Fred Decker, and it was directed by Roxanne Dawson.
Yes.
Who, of course, we were talking about her earlier, but she's Alana Torres from Voyager.
Yes,
an interesting thing.
You know, and Jonathan Franks,
one of the handful of female directors we've had in Star Trek, which is also kind of cool in its own way, but not cool if there's only a handful of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, hopefully there'll be more, but there's usually only been one or two females really in a series. So I mean, and then, you know, Jonathan Franks kind of set the precedent of, you know, the TV actors getting into directing, because I think he was the first of the TV actors, you know, post TOS crew. To get into directing.
And that's one of those things that's really unique about Star Trek, but changed the industry. That wasn't something actors did in before then. You didn't helm your own episodes in your own show. You know, that didn't happen. So this is one of those things that Star Trek really, that didn't happen. That doesn't mean there weren't examples of before you started seeing these emails. But, I mean, it wasn't the way that the industry worked. It just wasn't the way it happened. And Star Trek, like it had done in the past, just kept breaking the mold and doing things that didn't happen before.
Yeah, I'm always pleasantly surprised when I see, like, you know, LeVar Burton show up, or Jonathan Frank show up, or, you know, Roxanne Dachshund show up as, you know, a director on, you know, one of the other series. It's like, yay, Star Trek people are working on Star Trek. And, you know, I can't, the show,
it's them.
You know, I can't definitively say they're always excellent, but I want to say the ones that are directed by Star Trek people are usually pretty good. This is, you know, a pretty solid episode.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with this episode. It's actually a pretty decent episode. I mean, even the downer end note makes sense because of the way that the episode's set up. It just acts weird because of
the Vulcan lying. That's really the only problem. And, like, that's not Roxanne Dawson's fault because she didn't write it.
Yeah, she didn't write it.
So
Vulcan's lying was something they were working on that Berman and Braga were working on it. Berman and Braga were working on it. And I'm not really sure why they went this way, but this is the first time we really start seeing it. You know, we get the, in Broken Bow, we get the, oh, well, you guys are too young and too stupid to fly around at warp speed. So,
oh, like the snarky, like, looking down your nose, Vulcan, like, which is, like, also something you never really saw in Star Trek before. You know, Vulcans are always, like, you know, friendly-ish. Oh, granted, we only really saw Spock and Sarek for most of it, but...
And Sarek wasn't very friendly to Spock.
Well, no, but, you know, but, yeah, that's because, you know, he's doesn't like his son's weaker half.
Only had Sarek. And you know, because we had the movies by. And we had had TNG, and we had had, I mean, we'd had actually quite a few Vulcans, because by this point we'd had,
you know, you
had all of the Vulcans.
Tuvok, you had, you know, the Killick or whatever his name was, who Pong fired over Roxanne Dawson's character that one time, in engineering.
He's the same actor who was on, he was in the Lower Decks episode of TNG, and that actor was, they kept joking that they were twins. He played both characters. So
yeah, they're both Vulcans. Yeah,
the Enterprise, and he's on Voyager.
He could have been the same character because it's later.
Except he has a different name.
Maybe he changed his name to protect his identity.
It's alias.
Well, because what's his name? And was it Nick Locarno? It was basically Tom Paris. But they had to change they didn't want to pay for it. But, like, literally, like, it would have made sense. They should have, like, paid for the name once and said, hey, look, I changed my name to Nick Locarno so people wouldn't know I was, you know, the son of Admiral Paris. They could have done that one thing and it would have made so much sense because they're literally the same character.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, totally rebellious, you know, in the flight, you know, like, down to, like, the need for speed. Like, they're the same character.
Except that the character was created by that writer. So, there's no way they would have gotten away with the royalties on it. They would have had to have paid the writer.
Like I said, pay him once to say the name once, and then, you know...
It's the character.
Oh, that's true.
By the Writers Guild rules, they'd have to have paid for the character.
Oh, That's a shame.
Yeah, that's why they had to change entirely and give him a completely different name and a completely different everything, was because otherwise they would have had to have paid the Writers Guild rules would have required them to pay
every single episode.
Every single episode that Paris was in. Yeah, they would have gotten royalties for it.
Yeah. Stupid bureaucracy messing up with canon.
Yeah. I'm sure the writer's sitting there going, I wish I could eat. Because, you know, you know what the writer's like, that would have been awesome if I'd gotten royalties off all the episodes of Voyager. What really would have happened was, because of the Writers Guild, you would have ended up with Paris in, like, a handful of episodes that would have written him out. Oh. And because it would have cost money, and they would have just killed him, or he'd stop being a... He would stop being a
recurring character. Well, that would be a shame, because Paris is one of the guys on Voyager that I don't outright hate, but I don't really love him. He's, like, in that little middle ground.
Yeah.
So that would have been a shame. But this is not a Voyager episode.
Everything's connected. And we were talking about Sam Dawson, who's the director. So that makes sense. And, you know, so anyway, the teleplay was by Fred Decker, who was one of the writers of the story. And I don't know why I want to call him Drecker, because he has two K's in his name. And I swear
makes you think, Trekker.
Yeah, it's because it's not Decker like Will Decker.
Yeah.
This is the first, anyway, this is the first episode where we have updated makeup design for the Andorians. There's another Michael Westmore awesomeness. The antennas move.
I love the way they did the antennas and how they move and how they're expressive. Not to mention that it's Jeffrey Combs playing the main Andorian, Shran, but like just how like articulate they are. And I know this has nothing to do with Star Trek. I don't know if you've seen the live-action Tick series. Like, his antennas were like the same, except they were way bigger. I just love how that adds so much expression to the character.
Yeah. And it does. I mean, what they can do with those antennas is incredible.
Especially for how small they were.
Yeah. They were really, really agile. Anyway, Westmore, of course, was completely outdid himself. And he did a great job on this.
Always. I mean, he did every single spot on Jadzia. It wasn't a stencil. He had to paint every single one every single time. Although, if you were painting on Terry Farrell, I'm pretty sure he didn't do a stencil on purpose.
Yes.
It's like, I'll just do this by hand. This is fine. And then, you know, she was so pretty. He's like, yeah, we got to get rid of that nose prosthetic. It makes her look ugly. Which, you know, I'm glad for. But that also messes with canon a little bit. But, maybe there's a couple different races of, you know, Trill. Like, you know, type A, type B. I don't know. Maybe that's a class thing, having that thing on your nose.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Or you're delegated to, like, do, you know, speech, you know, talk to people, and then you get your simian put into Riker. That was a fun episode.
So there are a lot of other things that are interesting in the continuity on this. First of all, this establishes that Vulcan and Andor are neighbors, which was implied, strangely enough, in a DS9 episode.
The pale moonlight. That must have been like a sideline. I don't remember. We just did an episode of pale moonlight. I don't even remember. They must have just said something about it, like when they're looking at the star chart. Mm-hmm. Like something that wasn't a part of the main plot, but they just mentioned it in passing.
This is the first time that we mentioned Surak, which is cool. There's a lot of firsts in this. Of course, this is episode 7. So it's not like we're very far into Enterprise at this point in time. I remember watching this first run and going, hey, look, Andorians. Hey, look, their antennas wiggle. And that was pretty much like the coolest thing.
It still is the coolest thing. I love Andorians. I want to see them, you know, we mentioned the trailer for the 2017 series. I want to see Andorians. I want to see Orions. I want to see Gorn.
Yeah.
Let's get some original races back in here.
Yeah. Well, that's... we did ultimately get all of the ones you just mentioned ultimately showed up. But strangely enough, not until fourth season.
Yeah, we didn't see the Gorn. And then Gorn wasn't even in the prime. And there's that same motorcycle.
Well, we have motorcycle issues, don't we?
They just drive past every night at the same time. Yeah, and we only see the Gorn in the alternate universe as a stowaway on the Constitution.
Well, Defiant.
No, the Defiant, that's right.
Yeah, we had to have the Defiant because we established the Defiant in the Tholian one.
Oh, I'd love to see the more Tholians. That would be cool.
Boy, our one Tholian that we saw was just so cool.
Yeah, I want to see more with the Tholians. Those are, like, weird. They live in, like, you know, like, burning hot temperatures. Like, their ships are so weird. Don't even know how they work. Since I think, like, they're, like... their temperature is like the boiling point of like most metals. Like, so how does their spaceships work?
Well, and how do they create the mass to generate those webs? I mean, where is that coming from?
Maybe they've got like a super, you know, maybe they just got special spiders on their planet. Like I saw. I don't know. Again,
still a conservation of mass problem.
Again, you know, we're getting off into this weird tangent, but like, I saw something on Facebook where, like, scientists have discovered how to, like, make, like, spider-ish type webs that, like, can contract,
can expand and contract without drooping. Like, it coils back on itself somehow. So weird. Like spiderwebs. So maybe the Tholians have something like that, but it burns and kills the ships that get crushed inside of it.
Maybe. I don't know.
Biological nanotechnology. Maybe they're just that advanced. Then again, I don't know how nanotechnology works and if there's any heat, you know, requirements for nanotechnology. Do they have to, like, wear the special, you know, like, when people are sick and, like, they're in the hospitals and they're super contagious and the medical guys have to put their hands to the gloves to, like, handle the materials? Do they have to do that, like, you know, for the Tholians? So they have to, like, do that so they can interact with things colder than they are?
Well, it'd be like us touching things in liquid or liquid nitrogen.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want to stick your hand in liquid nitrogen. That would suck.
Yeah, it would.
So, yeah, it'd be very much like that. In fact, I think that's how they ultimately killed them.
You know, maybe they can cuddle up with Hortas, though. Because they can burn through the rock, and whenever they do that to the Tellarite, or, you know, not a Tellarite, whenever they do that to a Tholian, it's like, you know, a dog licking you. It's like, oh, that's kind of fun.
It's very cute. You're very cute. Go away.
Very cute, Horta. Go away.
Yeah. Horta, you're adorable. Go away. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that does kind of make you wonder.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I don't know. So let's get back to the gem episode.
Sorry, I'm rabbit-holing us worse than normal.
It's all good. Well, we've got, actually, like I said, that's part of the problem with Star Trek is that it's all connected. So, you know, it's kind of
rabbit holes within rabbit holes.
Yeah, everything's, and especially when we're talking about an episode that connects Vulcans,
so much,
and Dorians. You know, we've got a lot of things going on here.
Yeah, for sure, and it's stuff that builds, which I really like, because the Andorians, Shran in particular, comes back, you know, at least a couple times a season. So, like,
yeah,
it's like a back and forth, like, you know, oh, you know, I owe you, no, you owe me, no, I owe you, and it's like all sorts of, like, back and forth between them. And yeah, I heard a rumor that Shran would have been, like, made a main character if they would have gone with a new season of Enterprise. Did you hear that?
It's really hard to assess what would have happened in a fifth season of Enterprise, because you can listen to what Doug Drexler says about it, and you know, of course, there's the Enterprise refit that he designed. It's gorgeous, and I absolutely love Drexler's work, and it's, Drexler is really good at, you know, I mean, but then again, I mean, did he really have that on the board? Did he not? Or was it something he wanted to do, but they all knew the series wasn't going to go? So, you know what I mean? It's like, there are aspects to it. And I'm not saying that anybody's a liar by any stretch of the imagination. But what I'm saying is, how much of this was them sitting around in a coffee shop saying, oh, next season, we should do this. And how much of it was, we're going to do this in season 5. Oh, we've been canceled.
Yeah.
You know, how much of it was in what segment of that?
Did Doug Drexler also do the Enterprise J?
I don't know if he did the Enterprise J, because they had that. It seems like that wasn't.
Because that was an Enterprise. And, like, I'm not a fan of the Enterprise J design at all.
It doesn't seem like a Drexler design to me. It just doesn't feel like,
because
it.
It's got. But, I mean, it's almost like just a giant version of the Enterprise, because it's got, like, a really thin disc. I mean, granted, it's probably more decks and it's a lot bigger ship, but it's got, like, the weird, you know, ovular, you know, deflector dish on the saucer instead of, like, on the secondary hull, because the ship has no secondary hull. It's got those weird tiny nacelles. It looks like it's just, like, they tried to make, you know, the old is new again with, like, that ship. It's like a retro, trying to look like the NX-01. Yeah, I just wasn't a big fan of it. It's just, like, it's going backwards in design, not forwards.
Yeah, let's figure out. I'm looking into the episode now, which it was in, which was Exotic Prime. That's the episode where it is. I'm looking through it now and seeing if anybody's going to talk about who designed it. Because that would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering mostly if you knew off the top of your head, because, like...
I didn't know off the top of my head. Usually I do, but not that
particular. Well, because I love the Enterprise, you know, NX-01 refit. I think it's gorgeous, and I really don't like the Enterprise J design at all. So I was just wondering if it was by the same person who's got such great aesthetic taste in some places and not so much others. But I don't know if he designed the J or not. I actually got an argument about the J on a forum or, like, a Facebook page, like, years ago.
There we go. So, you were right. Drexler did design it.
It is a weird design.
It doesn't seem like his designs. I mean, it's not like I don't mind the J that much. But, yeah, I don't know.
just a thought.
Yeah. It has everything to do with Manny Coto and Drexler sitting around discussing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the CGI model of the ship. Well, no, wait a minute. So it says, the Enterprise J's exterior was seen only in the background in the form of graphics on a computer screen. We had originally had an exterior shot showing the Enterprise J and all its glory in the middle of the battle, recalled Manny Coto, and we had to drop it because of money. Both the visual effects department and Coto himself regretted the outcome. Following the omission of the exterior shot, the look of the Enterprise J, aside from the ship's observation deck, was essentially not at all described in the final draft of the script. Nor was even the computer display of the craft. However, the same script did specify that the Enterprise J was to be armed with a futuristic particle beam. The CGI model of the ship was built by production illustrator Doug Drexler, according to Robert Bonchun. From what I understand, it was done quick and dirty, so it was not really detailed in any way like a model we would use in multiple shots. Drexler himself said, with 2 days before the production meeting, I had to think fast and obsess, especially since I wanted Herman Zimmerman to be able to show a rendered animation of the ship in flight. If we had a few weeks, it would have finalized differently. As it was, the model was bashed out in a couple of hours, which explains why nobody really loves that ship. Because he just hammered it out.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that that being a thing.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, because I'm not.
But in general, going back to, you know, the Andorian incident, the Memory Alpha wasn't super big on this one. It was pretty shallow. I mean, as far as, you know, behind the scenes stuff, there's a couple firsts. You know, Ron Doxon directed, but nothing deep like Flashback or Pale Moonlight.
Yeah, we got a lot more from the episodes that we didn't like.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
Well, there you go. So, maybe the new series will be all about the Enterprise J, and then we'll be like, oh,
God. No, I'll just bash the series if it's about the Enterprise J. Screw it. We're the official haters of the new Star Trek series.
Right. So what are your thoughts, then, done this way? What are your thoughts on trying to back up here? Hi there. There we go. What are your thoughts on the Andorians?
The Andorians or the Andorian incident?
The Andorian incident is an episode.
It was good. I mean, it's a solid episode. It's definitely, like, early on in the series, and it's kind of really... It's almost kind of too early on to have that, like, really sad downer. Because even the first episode didn't have that downer. It was all kind of like, oh, it worked out. You know, even as dire as, you know, the first episode was with, like, getting the Klingon back and running it with the Sula Bonds and, you know... finding the helixes and, like, you know, it was pretty crazy, but it still ended that happy thing. And this one, it's starting to get dark pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't mind dark, but I was just kind of surprised to see that. And, you know, I can't think of the first time I've seen this episode. I've seen this episode lots and lots and lots of times. So I can't think about, I don't remember my first experience watching this episode. Like I did with some of the other Enterprise episodes where I have a very clear remembrance of my first view of it. But do you remember your first view of this episode?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we were watching it first run at the time. And I think my first thought was, up until this point, the Vulcans were kind of dull and boring. And now they were, I mean, not only were they liars, but... Now they had some depth, which I thought was interesting, and that was an intriguing part of the episode. I mean, I don't know if I liked the fact that we kind of knocked our Vulcans down a couple of notches, but in the end, in the aspect of the entire series, it's a different thing. But at the time, I thought, well, at least they're adding depth to the Vulcans. Kind of wish they weren't adding this depth to the Vulcans, but okay.
Yeah, it was definitely weird for the Vulcans. And, you know, a couple of things I do remember about General, the first run of Enterprise, is I hated the song. And so my dad would have me record it on VHS, so I'd pause out the song, and he'd yell at me for getting rid of the song. I think he also bought the album that song was on, because I remember hearing it in the car. I'm like, why? Why are you listening to this? It's such a bad song. But, you know, as I've gotten older, the song doesn't grate on me as badly as it used to, although the remix in Season 3 and 4 irked me.
Yeah, actually, truth be told, I didn't. Nobody liked that song that I knew of. I didn't know a single person that liked that opening credits song. There was a version out there that had on the original Broken Bow soundtrack. There was. I had a at the very end. Dennis McCarthy had the end credits sequence, and somebody had taken that in 2001, and had put it onto the opening credits, and it fit. All the beats hit at the right spot.
Huh.
So clearly, Archer's theme, which is on the Broken Bow soundtrack, was supposed to have been the opening credits.
Huh.
They all hit on the right beats. So anyway, that was a side note that I had observed. Somebody else had noted. So
yeah, fine. Yeah. Like I said, the song was awful at the beginning, but it's grown on me now that it's canceled. And looking back on it, it's been 10 years since it was canceled. It's you know, I don't love the song, but it doesn't irk me the way it used to. It's like, you know, it's almost like nostalgic in like a you know the painful way, because like, nostalgia is like, you know, like Latin or something for pain of the past or something like that. So.
So I was gonna say, it definitely is a nostalgia factor. There's definitely a lot of nostalgia factor.
And so it's like, it's over, it's canceled, it's sad that it's canceled. Now I don't mind the song as much until they remixed it. Because the remix, like, they remixed it because people hated it so much. But I think the remix is worse.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
The remix is kind
of... What about you? What's your takeaway on this episode?
So my takeaway on this episode was, at the time, I wasn't so big on it because they were changing the Vulcans to not just antagonists, but actually, like, making them into characters that I don't know, anti-heroes.
Semi-nemesises?
Yeah, nemesi.
Nemesi.
But looking at it in the grand scheme, with the recovery and fourth season of the Vulcan Forge saga, where they find the Kirshara and restore the Vulcans to their former glory sort of thing, that makes this an important episode to the arc.
Yeah. And so Enterprise did a great job of that, like kind of tying all the stuff together.
I don't think that was their intention when they started.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't.
I think that Berman and Braga really didn't want... I think they were simply thinking, hey, we just don't want our people to... We don't want the Vulcans to be the same. We don't want them to be the way they were in the other. We want to make them different. And I don't think they thought in the way of how to make it fit.
Sure.
And so I think Berman and Braga suffered from that. And I think what Manny Coto came aboard and said, look, your sucky Vulcans are not going to cut it, but we've got to write ourselves back out of this hole. Because it's clear that he did that a lot. Look, your bumpy head Klingons are not going to make it. We're going to have to write ourselves out of this hole.
Yeah.
Look.
And that was a great arc. Like, he did such great things for Enterprise.
You know, so he spent a lot of season four
fixing
Berman and Braga's weird, where they were going left and right and all over the place with the Vulcans.
Yeah, he did a masterful job. I was so grateful that he, you know, tied it up and did his best he could. I just really wish he could have gone on for a full seven seasons. It would have been incredible to see what he could have done.
Because, you know, the fifth season they would have somewhere gotten along to the Romulan War.
Oh, yes, that would have been amazing. Or maybe they could have taken more time with the founding of the Federation, or, you know, different things like that. Finished out the Temporal Cold War, because the Temporal Cold War I absolutely adored. And
yeah, that's, the Temporal Cold War was a beautiful arc that they didn't ever get back
finish. To. Oh, it's such a sad thing, but, you know,
And so, I mean, I guess my feeling on this in general is it's not a bad episode. It's actually one of the top 10 mostly voted, well, fans voted it into the top 10.
Really? Top 10?
Yeah.
I wouldn't give this a top 10. It's a solid episode, but I wouldn't give it a top 10.
Top 10 for Enterprise, not top 10 for everybody.
I mean, like, top 10 Enterprise are all going to be in season 4, because season 4 is amazing.
Well, it is, to be fair, IMDb has it at number 10. So, and yeah, actually, if you look at all the rest of them, The Forge, fourth season, The Augments, fourth season.
Yeah.
First Flight's not fourth season, but it's still a very good episode. Judgment, that's third season. Intriguing. Twilight, definitely one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Broken Bow, makes sense.
Broken Bow's a great episode. It's a great opener.
A Night in Sick Bay.
Oh, that's a fun episode.
Call that one number two.
I don't think I'd call that one number two, but it was definitely a fun episode.
It was, but short of the almost erotic scene between Linda Park and Julian Blaylock, I don't know. I'm not sure. Number two on their list is Carbon Creek. That makes sense. I like that episode
a lot. That's a great episode.
That's a second season episode, too. And then number one is In a Mirror Darkly. And you know what?
Excellent.
Speaking of Tholians. Because that one's a beautiful. That episode, they took a lot of risks, and it was totally worth it.
Oh, for sure. That is such a grand, grand episode. I loved that so much. The Mirror Universe is always a lot of fun to delve into.
Yeah, but they really went into a nice place with that.
Oh.
So there's your top 10 from IMDb, and it's number 10 on the IMDb list. So,
That's an interesting list. I don't know who made it. It's interesting. I don't agree with it, but it's got definitely got some good ones on there.
Yeah, I like some Multitude. That's another one that I think it would have been in my top 10 for Enterprise, so...
It's been a while since I've watched all the way through Enterprise, so I can't say what my top 10 would be, but I just know that this episode wouldn't be in my top 10. It's a good episode, but it'd probably be like, you know, top 20, maybe. I don't know. It'd be further down on the list. But, Guy, we have an email.
We have an email.
We have an email.
Is it from a female?
It is from a female, believe it or not.
That's a strong bad joke for those of you who... long time ago.
Oh, the last time we read a female's email on the thing, I don't think she ever listened to us again. I never got a follow up from Ultra Woman.
If you're out there, follow up.
Ultra Woman, yeah, well, let us know. Like, we read your episode back on. We read your not episode. We read your email back on the Spaceballs episode. And her name was Ultra. Like, her email came across as Ultra Woman, so we were like, "Oh, that's a funny name. I bet she's awesome."
Yeah.
And we might have gotten crude, but but that's the risk you take with Synthaholics, unfortunately. But this we've got an email. It says from Donna. It says, "Hi guys, there was a way Garrett could have been added into if wishes were horses. Okay, so Sisko didn't have his dress uniform. So why didn't he go to Garrick's shop? And if Garrick was closing up for the day." So Cisco's SOL. This is my first time listening to your podcast, by the way, and I have a feeling it won't be my last. Donna.
Well, it's good to hear from you. And that's true. That would be a great place to put in Garrick. And you're right. Garrick would have totally faced if wishes were horses.
Oh, Garrick would have just slapped Rumpelstiltskin.
It fixes it all because it's Garrick. And Andrew Robinson's such a wonderful, wonderful actor, and he does such a brilliant job. And he's strong, and he definitely would have fixed it.
Definitely.
You're right, go to the tailor, but that would definitely have been a thing.
Was Sisko going to the... Did Sisko not have a dress uniform, wishes or horses? I haven't seen it for wishes.
I think it was Bashir, but I think the point that she was making was...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was Bashir in...
I've got a knock before that because I think she was typing fast and there's nothing wrong with that. And I've done that before in my life too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not trying to knock her. I just haven't seen If Wishes Were Horses in a really long time, so I just wondered if there was also a uniform incident in that episode too. Because I know you watched it to say why you didn't like it. So
yeah.
I just wanted to double check with you on that. But yeah, thank you so much for the email. We love emails. We love reading them on the air. Thank you so much, Donna. Thank you for listening. And
yeah, thank you for listening, definitely.
And we hope you enjoy our other episodes. We hope you enjoyed getting to hear your email on the air. And the rest of you who are listening to this, if you want to hear your words that you've written to us on the air, we will read them. We will do that thing, and we will, you know, say what we think and kind of, you know, reply to you. And yes, Andrew Robinson having Garrick in any episode would probably make any terrible episode, you know, infinitely better.
Yeah.
Because whenever they write for him, all of a sudden the writing turns gold.
Part of it is, yeah, part of it is the writing. Part of it is definitely the actor.
Sure.
Andrew Robinson, she's so solid.
He knows how to do it, and he's so expressive with his eyes, especially he's under all that makeup, and he's so very, very expressive.
I am looking up now because now I am completely worried that I might be wrong on this because a while back I drew a picture of Julie Cochran, who's the captain of the Tamriel in my comic. Mm-hmm. In the dress yellows, and she's tugging at her collar and really having problems with it and everything like that. And somebody had commented that nobody likes their dress uniform. So now, of course, I have it in my head that everybody's in their dress uniforms. So it could have been anybody, and I could have seen it. And so I'm now looking up the episode to see if it was Bashir or if it was Sisko. It might have been Sisko, but I know that there was a scene where Bashir was having a problem with his dress.
It was Bashir in the episode Move Along Home, who didn't have his dress uniform for the Wadi, and I was complaining, why didn't he use a replicator? But why didn't he go see Garrick also? It was a very good second choice.
Right, because I think that's what she might be referring to, was Bashir in Move Along Home.
Yeah. But, I didn't know, I hadn't seen If Wishes Were Horses in so long, so I don't remember if there's a uniform incident in that one or not.
Maybe. Well, I can't remember anything anymore, because they're all blurry together. I've got 726 episodes of Star Trek just doodling around in my head.
Yeah.
I always forget stuff, so I am not about to say that she's not totally right, and I am totally wrong. I am all about this.
Well, it doesn't matter. What episode, whatever it was in, the point is they didn't have the uniform. The second point is B. Garrick can make it, and that's how you get him into the episode. And then having him close up shop.
Just been in there anyway.
Then having him close up shop and, like, you know, giving Sisko the hand and, like, walking out, like, no, I'm closed. I can't help you. Would have been a nice little funny thing.
Yeah, I guess that's... Anyway, yeah, long story short, I'm totally willing.
Excellent.
Oh, interesting side note, now that I'm looking into If Wishes Were Horses, Hannah Hatte, who played Molly, she apparently, she remembers the episode because she... thought legitimately that the actor who was playing Rumpelstiltskin was going to steal her. So she was scared to be alone with him in the same room.
He was creepy.
Yeah, so she had to have somebody else with her at all times.
Oh, I can imagine. She's a little kid. So, I mean, I can see being scared of that.
Rodent. And so, you know, what does she remember? But, I mean, I think it's funny that she's now recalling these bizarre memories.
Oh, and she's like, what, 3 or 4? That's like on the cusp of just being able to remember stuff, too.
Yes.
So, like, that's like...
She can remember all that stuff.
Yeah. That's pretty bizarre. But, yeah, I mean, if I was a little kid, I'd be scared of that little guy, too. He was creepy. And he was short and had all that makeup on. I was like, yeah, I wouldn't want to be in the same room with him alone, either. Good for you, Molly. You're smart. Everyone, be like Molly. Be smart. Don't stay in rooms by yourself with Rumpelstiltskin. Or anyone pretending to be Rumpelstiltskin.
I am actually curious. Apparently, she reprised her role as Molly in Renegades.
Yeah, she's going to be Molly in Renegades, which I've kind of brought this up before. Like, Renegades, it was an interesting premise. I didn't think they followed through on their plot lines very well, all the stuff they brought up. And I'm really scared about how the next Renegades episode is going to go, because they have so much stuff they didn't wrap up in the first episode, yet they're throwing in Robert Beltran as Chakotay, they're throwing in Aaron Eisenberg as Nog, they're throwing in Terry Farrell reprising her role as Jadzia Dax. I don't even know how that's going to happen, because, you know, she died in both universes, the regular universe and the mirror universe. I don't know how they're bringing back Jadzia. So there's, like, all... And, like, they're bringing back Jake Sisko. Like, they're... And Molly. So all these actors are coming back. They're bringing in all these new actors to Renegades. And I'm like, how are you going to have time to, like, fit these people's stories in for it to make sense? And, you know, one more episode, because I think that's all they got funded for. They were trying for two episodes, but I don't think they made enough money to get funded for both new episodes. So I'm just scared they're just going to, like, collapse under the weight of all the people they're throwing at this and not, like, have a good story.
Yeah, I don't know. There is a certain amount of flash appeal that I will admit that it is not an attractive thing for me, so I avoid it, kind of, with Tamerlan. But there's a certain amount of flash appeal to, we've got this character, and that character, and that character, and, you know, there's a flash to it. And it's, I don't know, I mean, to me, I feel like, well, you're bulking up just a little too much.
You see, that's what I feel like, too. And, like, you know, they might have a great story, they might have a great reason for it, but personally, I feel they made all these announcements during the Kickstarter, so I feel like they were trying to get people to donate with adding all these actors' names to it. Now that people have donated, they have to be like, oh my gosh, now we have to figure out how to squeeze all these people in and make it make sense. Or maybe they don't care about making it make sense, because the first episode has still, like, huge gaping plot holes. Like, how is Lexa Khan's daughter? He's been dead for 100 years, and did he give a sperm donation to Bones before they exiled him on SETI Alpha? Like, I don't know.
That brings up a visual I just did not know. I'm just saying.
You're welcome. But I mean, like, I don't know how else he could. I don't, it doesn't make sense. Like, how is she his? I mean, like, how?
How?
Like, it had to have been, like, test tube baby and inserted into, you know, a host. But, like, I don't know. Or maybe, like, he had sex with a lady and she just froze her for a couple hundred years and she just thawed out. I don't know. They never explained how she is his daughter. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Everyone seems to know, but no one will tell us how that is even possible.
Yeah.
And I hope they address it in the next episode, because I really was disappointed they didn't in the first one. But, you know, I am excited to see the next one. I am excited to see where it's going to go, but I am, like, you know, very reserved and, you know, not sure how it's going to go.
I don't know. I give her a lot of props for giving them a lot of props for bringing them on. But yeah.
I mean, I'm excited to see how it turns out, and I hope it turns out well. I'm just scared.
And then, this is not to knock, but I mean, you know. How are they going to pull all these things off? And maybe they'll pull it off really well. And that might happen.
But the thing is, they had, like, the perfect crew size at the end. They had Lexa. They had Hologram, you know, John Connor. They had, you know, the doctor lady who, you know, liked doing sex calls, sex hologram calls with Dr. Zimmerman. You had, you know, Shree, the Andorian. You had, I can't remember her name, the Romulan. And then you had the shapeshifter guy. So, I mean, like, you had, like, a really solid crew, and you could see adventures with them, and now they've added, like, another full crew, basically, of actors to this thing, on top of, you know, Tim Russ and, you know, Chekhov back at Starfleet headquarters, who are also, you know, your big old actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, so it's juggling so much. I'm just like, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they may be smarter than me. I hope they are.
Well, and maybe they're going to do a couple of episodes. Maybe this was, you know, we're going to have a few of them here and a few of them there and a few of them down the road.
Well, sure, but their Kickstarter that they finished, you know, months ago was for two more episodes.
Just one episode.
I think it was for two, but I don't think they got funded enough to do another one. And now with the Axanar lawsuit and, you know, the new series coming out and, you know, even Star Trek Continues, which has, you know, always been super successful, you know, it took them a while to make their money on their third, you know, their third Indiegogo or the third crowdfunding.
Yeah.
So I just don't know if they're going to be actually any more Renegades after the second episode, just because of the cumulative, you know, everything that's happened, the lawsuit, the new series, and, you know, donor fatigue.
You think there's donor fatigue?
I think so. Or, you know, fear of donating because of the lawsuit. And then, you know, less need to donate because there's going to be, you know, canon Star Trek coming out soon, you know? So I think there's less need of general Star Trek fans for fan funding if there's a legitimate source of Star Trek coming out. And there hasn't been for the past 10 years. So that's why fan films...
Crowdfunding has kind of come up in the shadow of that emptiness there. That's an interesting point. I hadn't actually thought of that. And as somebody who is crowdfunding, that is kind of, I don't know, and things like this kind of freak me out a little, you know? Because it's true. I mean...
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Is
there funding fatigue? Is there, you know, I don't know.
I mean,
and especially since we're going to have to pay to get Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on Facebook a lot, and I see new Patreons pop up every single day. And it's like, wow! I mean, everyone's trying to get into that private donation or that Kickstarter or that Patreon or that Indiegogo. There's always something new, and at some point, I think it's gonna taper out with donor fatigue. And with Star Trek in particular, there's been so many Star Trek fan films, and now there's a legitimate source of Star Trek coming in January. Donor fatigue on top of not having the need to donate since there is a source of Star Trek coming already, you know? And, you know, it'll be like, you know, hopefully 10 to 20 episodes a year instead of, you know, two or three from your favorite fan film a year, if that.
Right, right. This is not to discourage our listeners to not donate to things, because...
No, I'm not trying to discourage. I'm just scared that this is...
Yeah, no, I'm just saying...
I'm just scared this is what's going to happen. I may be completely wrong. People may want these fan films more than the actual Star Trek. But just from my point of view, this is how I feel things are going.
Right.
Or may go. You know, and if you think I'm wrong, you can always email us.
Yeah, email us.
At thetheholics@yahoo.com. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me why I'm wrong. You know, give me the insight you have. And we'll talk about it here on the show.
Yeah, and if you really think that we're wrong, you can always donate to patreon.com/GSDavisArt.
And patreon.com/synthaholics. Yes. So
throw a dollar to each of us. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we love you long time. Give you Synthaholics episode extras, and he's got great extras on his Patreon as well. So check us both out. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can follow me at David_J_Duncan. You can follow Aaron at Blackbird2004. You can follow Faith at Faith Hertzberg. And you can follow Synthaholics at Synthaholic Duo. Where can they find you?
And you can follow me at USS Tamerlan or at GS Davis Art on both Twitter and Facebook and Patreon.
Don't forget, we also have our Synthaholics group on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics. You can, if you want, if you don't feel like donating, but you want to help the show out, you can go on to iTunes and give us some stars and some ratings, and we'll start reading those on the air, too. When we get ratings, we'll read your stuff, and we'll thank you on the air live. Also, we're on Google Play Music, and we are on Stitcher. So, whatever your podcasting... destination is, you can find us there.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's been good being with you tonight and being with all of you people.
Thank you so much for joining me tonight, Guy. It was a pleasure, as always.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. We'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. We'll
Thanks, guy. That was fun.
It was good. Lots. I'm glad you could stand just staring at my picture the entire time. Thank you for not making me move the camera.
Next time, it better be on your face.
I know.
I'm joking.
See that?
Joking.
Totally.
Joking. Well, it's just easier to read cues back and forth when we're looking at each other. But it's
in reality, I didn't think about it until after I was doing this. But I'm in the middle of the live draw, but I haven't bumped the camera. So.
Oh yeah, no problem at all. It's not a big deal. Like, I mean, I feel like we were maybe a little bit more awkward with each other tonight because we didn't have that facial cue back and forth. But I mean, it's all good. And,
and I think part of it also was I was looking up stuff on the web the entire time because we kept saying things.
We kept going in all these different directions. Yeah. Also, I might have been off because I'm just really tired. I woke up really early for the interview this morning, and I need you to tell me if I'm crazy or not.
Oh, you're crazy.